Caltech invented the concealed carry category years ago with the P11, but did they stop there? Heck no. One innovation just led to another and another, and, well, just look at their latest, the P15. It's the lightest, thinnest, double-stack 9mm handgun on the market at only 14 ounces and 7/8 inches wide. The P15 has a 4-inch barrel and double-stack magazine that holds 15+1 total capacity. Its gator grip texture on the polymer version increases stability and makes for ambidextrous grip safety and easy, accurate handling. If you prefer a more vintage look, choose the metal version with classic wood panels and textured grips. The P15 has a Tritium Plus fiber optic front sight with a fully adjustable Tritium 2-dot rear to keep you on target in any situation. Make the P15 your choice for concealed carry. Learn more at KeltechWeapons.com. Sign up for the Keltech Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories at KeltechWeapons.com. That's KeltechWeapons.com.
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with conspiring to defraud the United States, conspiring to disenfranchise voters, and conspiring and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding. The indictment was issued by a grand jury of citizens here in the District of Columbia, and it sets forth the crimes charged in detail. I encourage everyone to read it in full. The attack on our nation's capital on January 6th, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election.
All right, so that was Jack Smith yesterday announcing this indictment, which we are going to break down. And I was reading it yesterday, and Lorraine was covering it too. You know her from the YouTube discussion. And we're going to get into all of it. The judge, the four charges, all of this, because there's a lot of stuff here. And I was reading this yesterday. Now, there's some things in here that I don't... let me start with this. There were two things that the left had always said, and I'm looking at my notes because I was writing notes and I was reading all of this stuff. There are two things that the judge had said, or not the judge, but sorry, but the left in the media, that it was what? Incitement and like seditious conspiracy, two charges for which those aren't in any of these, any of this indictment. Welcome to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Always good to be with you here, top of this out for the first hour, first of three, this Wednesday, and we're going to break all of this down so you know exactly what's up. This is what we do. We read it, and we go over all of it for you, so that, and if there's something that I think is bad, I'm going to tell you. If there's something that I don't think is bad, I'm going to tell you. Now, you might think something that I don't think is bad, and that's fine. I'm going to tell you what it is, and I'm going to tell you my thoughts on it. So the first thing that stuck out to me, and there's a couple of things in here where they get into, and if you get the newsletter, I sent this out. I also sent out the PDF of the indictment. It's only 45 pages. Don't gasp. Stop. You're like, it's only 45 pages. It's only actually 45 pages. And like the first couple of pages are a bunch of legalese. So it's actually not the worst thing. It's you can read it. You can read it and look at it. The issue here is this is all over the January 6th stuff. And it's just so odd to me that, you know, here after all of the discussion over conspiracy and everything else and incitement, you don't have in there the stuff that they were actually you know, kind of going for. This is just an extension of what Democrats weren't able to do with the impeachment. Because this ultimately is a political, this is something that they should actually, you know, if they had the, it hurt them so bad last time, they're trying to continue the impeachment. What they weren't able to satisfy and substantiate during the impeachment, they're going to try to continue this now. And it's insane. This is just, I mean, this is just where, and it's so weird, the timing. Can we just for a second start there? The coincidence of the timing on the heels of all of this stuff with Hunter Biden. Isn't it amazing, Kane? The timing, just a big coinkydink. Yeah, coincidence. That's all it is. Just a big old coincidence. Amazing that. I'm so sure. Now, let's dive into this. So here he is, third time indicted. And going through this whole, like I said, if you get the email, you get the email prep for radio. And you also get a whole other piece that I sent you, and it has all of the PDFs, etc., or the PDF of the indictment. Now, this indictment is actually kind of, it's ridiculous. I mean, I was going over it. It's dumb because the first thing that you're missing is the whole incitement. He didn't incite anything. They said that he was. I mean, hell, that's the language that they use this entire time. I don't care if you like Trump or hate Trump. Like, I don't like how he's running his campaign. He's not my pick in the primary. Voted for him in two elections. This is stupid. I don't care who the hell you are. If you can't even admit that this is so dumb, then you're so partisan, you are beyond reach. That's all there is to it. This is more than just about one politician or a party or a primary or even a general. This is, we're kind of in the latter stages of the total transformation of the federal government. That's what this is. So this grand jury filed this indictment. Of course, it's going to be in a DC court. What does that mean? Oh, they'll go to trial and they'll convict him. Just get used to that. That's going to happen. That's not speculation. That's going to happen because that's this district. That's this court. This is the judge, by the way. This judge is, and we'll talk more about her coming up. She's the judge that really went hard on all of the J6. I'm not talking about the January 6th defendants that were the rioting. Fine, rioters, we've talked about this. I swear to you, I'm going to jump off my roof if I have to like substantiate my thoughts on that again. I can't even deal with it. It's like telling toddlers, like the drive-bys that come in. I guess you approve of it. Oh my gosh. But the thing that's important, though, is that the people who were just like unlawful parading, and I use that because that was one of the dumbest charges that I saw, she went hard on those folks. I mean, she applied the strictest of interpretation of law against those posts. So that's, you know, it's kind of important, right? Very important. So there's, you kind of take all of that in consideration. It's a 45-page indictment. It lists four counts. Conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding, and conspiracy against rights. And again, incitement is not one of the recommended charges. This U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan, an Obama nominee, it's insane. Even Andy McCarthy had some pretty harsh words, and people think that Andy is not like a sometimes he'll say things that works in favor of Trump, sometimes goes against it, and I think he gets a hard rap from some of Trump's most ardent defenders because they think that Andy doesn't like him. Andy's a totally clinically pure with law. And he had some very harsh words about this. His first remark was that he said, quote, he's extravagantly stretched these statutes, talking about Jack Smith. He said, this is what I was talking about. This is an extension of impeachment. He goes, this is a proxy for what should have been a political impeachment process. So the trial set for May 2024. Kane, when is that?
Just a little bit before the election.
Yeah, yeah. Now, here's the thing. One of the first things that I saw going through this, this is at the bottom of page 6. This is a complete attack on free speech. It says the defendant's knowledge of the falsity of his election fraud claims. Now, I had this out. Now, forgive me, because I was high on cold medicine last night. And I was going to write more about this, so I just put it in there. I just put it in the email that I sent out, and then I collapsed on my sofa because I was watching all of this. It said, it gets in, this is starts at the bottom of the page of page 6. It says, the defendant, his co-conspirators, and their agents made knowingly false claims that there had been outcome determinative fraud in the 2020 presidential election. This is bottom of page 6 in the indictment. Going on to page 7, it says, These prolific lies about election fraud included dozens of specific claims that there had been substantial fraud in certain states, etc. Gets into it. Says, now the sentence reads, next, these claims were false and the defendant knew that they were false. In fact, the defendant was notified repeatedly that his claims were untrue and often by the people on whom he relied for candid advice. And it says that he deliberately disregarded truth. And then they gave, you know, several examples of how they say that he deliberately discarded the truth. Now, why did I say get a load of this? And I did at least remember to remove the redacted word that I was using to describe it when I first posted about it. Because this is an issue of free speech. This is a First Amendment issue. This is an attack on the First Amendment. This has nothing to do with J6. I don't care who the hell you are. This is a First Amendment issue. And I mean, I thought that was wild that this is, how, I mean, right on the bottom of page six. I mean, it's nuts to get it to this. I mean, he kept saying, Jack Smith keeps going, oh, Trump made a quote unquote, knowingly false claim. I mean, I'm looking at, you can control F on the document and go through all the times Jack Smith goes, knowingly false claim. There's like a handful of times. That is Jack Smith's attempt to criminalize speech. So when Andy McCarthy says an extravagant reach of these statutes, I mean, he's really hitting on a number of things there. This is an absolute brazen nut job attack. Page six and seven on the First Amendment. Now, again, here's the litmus test. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you like him or dislike him. I don't care if you're, you know, a leftist or a righty. I don't care. If people cannot at least realize when their freedoms and their liberties could actually be imperiled by what this guy is doing because they're so blinded by partisanship, you are too partisan for reason. And it's kind of wild. I was messaging, golly, my phone was just bleh, bleh, bleh. And I, you know, was talking to a number of people. And I'm like, And I was like, look, I know that I've had Benadryl and Sudafed and all this other stuff. I'm like, but it seems on page six and seven, and in this group discussion, there are a couple of people who, it's weird because it's a group of people who adore Trump, and then there's two who just loathe him. But everyone gets along. And the two who loathe were like, that's nuts. It's nuts. Yes, that's correct. It's crazy. You know, et cetera. And everyone's kind of in agreement with this. It's going way too far. And that's a very problematic time or situation. I don't even know how in the world. I mean, there's nothing, you know. I mean, I'm reading this and I'm trying to figure out what can be defined as actually objectively illegal in this. So we're going to talk more about this all throughout the show because I don't want to weigh you down in just, you know, one segment. But, I mean, this is nuts. I thought that was, you know, pretty nuts. Now, some of the other stuff that we're hitting, we got some of the reaction to this. And what a trial would mean. So there's a lot of speculation that a trial on this would mean, I don't know how it wouldn't cover total discovery on 2020. Right? Because when you look at some of the claims in here, Jack Smith was stupid enough. They think they're so clever. I don't know how that's not a state-by-state total discovery in 2020. Also, Mike Pence cannot read a room. Oh my gosh. Don't you dare compare him to Dan Quayle. Dan Quayle is a decent man. Don't you dare. I'm not saying that Mike Pence isn't. But don't sit here and don't besmirch Dan Quayle that way. Stop it. Also, why the Hunter Biden case likely won't go to trial. And, you know, it's totally fine to get burner phones, right? To just talk about weather and stuff like that. And you know what? Isn't that what Trump just did? Trump just talked about the weather. It's totally right. It's what he did. Right? See, we're all in agreement. All right. As we get moving, we got headlines on the way, too. Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so first up with our headlines today. I did not know that the dunes were this big in Michigan. I mean, I knew that they had like major sand dunes, but there's apparently the Sleeping Bear Dunes National Park in Michigan. They get over a million visitors every year. So they have to levy a $3,000 rescue fine for people who are not strong enough to make it up the dunes. And there's apparently tons of video footage of hysterical people trying to get up the dunes and not making it and kind of just like laying face down in the sand. And then they have to be rescued. It's a 110-foot wall of sand and it's a $3,000 fine. And everybody's like, well, it didn't look like it was going to be that hard. That is hysterical that is even a thing. And they have a big, you know, sign of, I mean, it is a very, I wouldn't climb it. I would just want to sit there by the shore. That's what I would want to do. But $3,000 fine, so don't. Loneliness, seems obvious, shrinks your brain. Underappreciated public health crisis, it's being described via the New York Post. They said that loneliness is actually a significant health threat and people with the fewest social contacts had smaller brains. A couple of years ago, there was a study talking about how more social activity actually helped extended the lifespan for elderly people. And they did a study of nursing home patients and people who had like assisted living at home. And they said that it was the loneliness factor that actually was the determination of longevity. So yeah, there's something to this. There's a lot of discussion about this. They said that the Melania Trump stylist got $260,000 from one of the PACs in 2022. And I don't know, like I go back and forth on this stuff because in some instances when you donate, especially big ticket donors, they kind of know how their money is going to be spent. So I go back and forth, but I also think that this is wasteful, especially with all of the legal bills that he's got. And DeSantis appointed district. They abolished that Disney's DEI race-based programs. Ooh, another victory. Stay with us. Every day we hear about another familiar brand undermining their customers and going, quote, woke. Americans are sick and tired of having far-left propaganda jammed into every product they consume. And for years, they've dumped millions into far-left causes, and everybody had to kind of take it because you needed a cell phone and probably thought that there was no alternative. Well, there is, and that's Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offering dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to in your area, minus the far-left propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending a message that you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, our military, veterans, and first responders. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code Dana and ask about their coverage guarantee while you're there. Get the same dependable service and take a stand for your values. Make the switch today. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Are you considered to be in Generation X? New reports show that Generation X is not saved for retirement. In this age of social media, do you own your own stuff or does your stuff own you? Is it time to start making some financial changes to reduce your expenses? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
The statutes that are on the books now are vague, and otherwise Congress hasn't criminalized that. So I think what you have is the case comes down to, can he prove that Trump believed the things that he was saying, notwithstanding all the evidence to the contrary. But even if he could get over that hurdle, which I think is daunting, I do think that you have the problem that he has extravagantly stretch these statutes in order to try to capture this behavior. And that's because this is really a proxy for what should have been a political impeachment process. They're leaving to the criminal justice system the failure of Congress to carry out a successful impeachment.
So that's Andy McCarthy last night. And that, I think he is exactly, I totally agree with him on this, because that I was reading the indictment before he was weighing in on it. And then literally after I got through the bottom of page 6 and 7, where that's like, I think the biggest thing for me. And I don't think I'm speaking by myself either on this. He said it was just serendipitous. He said what he said. Welcome back to the program. Bottom of this first hour, Dana Loesch with you. So specifically, and there's we have a piece that's going to be up on some of these, on the charges that'll be up within this hour. But right now I want to focus on that, the bottom of page 6 and 7 of this indictment, because here's how you might think, okay, this is like, I'm so tired of hearing about it, Dana. I'm so tired of hearing about the indictment. It's the third one. Okay. Here's why you need to, though. Here's why you need to care, because this is a free speech issue. This goes beyond the regular, oh, we're going to argue over election statutes, all of this stuff. This goes beyond that. So you heard what Andy just said there. Andy was saying that what ultimately Jack Smith is going to have to do is to prove in court that Trump didn't believe that there was election fraud. Now, I've been real clear with everybody on stuff. Like, I thought, for instance, Hillary Clinton was moronic to say that the election was stolen from her. Do I want people criminally penalized for that? Hell no. I am an absolute free speech purist to an irritating degree. You cannot start weaponizing stuff like this. That's insane. That's insane. She was wrong and there was no evidence. But is it criminal? No. I mean, if you're going to go after Trump for it, then what? You know what I mean? This is so insane. They don't have an incitement charge, so they're trying to stretch and argue that he was lying, and therefore that contributed to some sort of beginning of a riot, or that fueled the riot, because they can't technically say that he incited. That's not part of any of the charges. That's what's insane. I want you to listen to Jonathan Turley on this. This is audio soundbite 6, because he says he agrees this is all a part of the First Amendment. Listen to this.
The most jarring thing about this indictment is that it basically just accuses him of disinformation. This is a disinformation indictment. It says that you were spreading falsehoods, that you were undermining the integrity of the election. That's all part of the First Amendment. And I think that courts will look skeptically. He might have a fair shot with a D.C. jury and maybe a D.C. judge. He's going to have a harder time with the courts.
See, that's the problem. The D.C. jury and the D.C. court. Because here's how it affects you. What if you're one of those individuals who believe that the election was stolen? Now, for instance, I believe that absolutely there's election fraud. I was telling Kane, I had to actually fight to get someone who is illegally registered to vote at my address to get them removed. So I'm not going to be lectured to about election fraud, because that was a pain in the ass to do. And that was just one individual. And I think it was probably somebody's stolen identity. I don't even know if there's going to be any repercussions for that, like any criminal consequences. Who knows? But it absolutely does exist. At what degree is what you call into question? And then if it's centralized enough, because everything is so decentralized purposefully to prevent that very thing. Our founders were incredibly insightful. Now, whether or not you agree with it, whether it was stolen, you know, nationally, or whether it, I mean, that's something that I have to have evidence. I'm not saying that I would disregard evidence. I don't disregard evidence, but I would need enough evidence to say that. But there are people who believe it. That's not criminal. That's not a criminal thing to believe it. It's not a criminal thing to talk about it. And it's not criminal for the former president to think it. It's not criminal for the former president to talk about it. So he actually would have to walk into court and prove that he didn't believe that. Now, what kind of repercussions does that mean for you? If they can go after someone who used to live in the White House for quote unquote disinformation, folks, what do you think they're going to do to you? You think that this would not be a weaponized precedent? Now, you might say, yeah, but Dana, that would get overturned. I mean, even, you know, the whole, what was it, the Schenck case. And that was the ridiculous shouting fire in a crowded theater. That was a dictum. That was actually that Oliver Wendell Holmes had written but didn't actually include in the, you know, the legal opinion. That's an aside. But, you know, 60 years later, that whole case was overturned. You could say, yeah, but Dana, you know, it could be overturned. Okay, that took 60 years. We can do in the meantime. You see what I'm saying? You go through that legal purgatory. Who knows how long that lasts? Like the legal purgatory you're having to wade through right now with ATF and pistol braces, or the legal purgatory that you had to wade through while you waited for the courts to act on the CDC and rent moratoriums. I mean, that legal purgatory where you're technically a criminal, but technically not. See what I'm saying? It doesn't matter. It's that time period. It is an absolute affront to the First Amendment. That's infuriating that there are not, I'm just livid at that, the lack of concern over that. I mean, that's one of the biggest things to me. Now, they had five co-conspirators in this as well, because this, they're talking about this indictment. Five co-conspirators in this, what should have been, as McCarthy said, an actual impeachment case, but they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. So they're having to do this. This is the best way that they could, you know, they could try to do it. So insane. So this, the five co-conspirators, let's pull this up. And the four counts related to January 6th and supposed attempts to overturn the election. The most serious ones, the most serious one for legal ramifications, that has to do with the location in D.C., now, if you had to guess how, you know, say, give me a percentage out of 100 of what you think the political makeup of a D.C. jury pool would be. Kane, let me go ahead and just give me a guess. What? Give me a guess.
Like 95%?
Oh, yeah. Democrat? Yeah, you're actually right. You're like, it's actually 96%, but you're just right. You're spot on. So you have a jury pool that is predominantly, is not even strong enough of a word, registered, not likely voters that are Democrat, but registered Democrats. The judge, Tanya Chutkan, is, you know, clearly, she's going to be a barrel of laughs. This judge that was assigned to the case, Obama appointee, the only federal judge in D.C. who sentenced all of the January 6th defendants, not even just the ones who were actually writing and deserved tough sentences, but the ones that weren't, all of them were given higher sentences than recommended by the government. She handled 31 of those cases. Every one of them got sentences higher than was recommended by the government. Now, to compare that, Red State had a piece back a year ago where they looked at the January 6th defendants. And 80% of those defendants got sentences that were below government recommendations. So she actually went at a way higher rate, way harder than all the other judges. So I think that's kind of indicative. The Associated Press in 2022 labeled her the toughest punisher. Now, there's this comes, let me pull this up. I saw this, this comes from Daily Caller. Trump's D.C. judge, so the judge in this case, worked for Boies, Schiller, and Flexner, LLP. Interesting. Have we heard that before? Don't Google it, Kane.
I was about to.
Okay, Google it. Go ahead and Google it. Boies, Schiller, and Flexner, LLP. Where have we heard that from that before, that law firm? Because she worked there. That's the D.C. judge. Yeah, are you looking at it, Kane?
Yeah, I just went to the website.
So, do you know who else used to be employed by that law firm?
No, who?
I'll give you one guess. His name rhymes with Schmunter Biden.
Is it Hunter Biden?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And, wait, there's more.
What?
Uh-huh. With the purchase of one Burisma partner, you get two Burisma partners. Heather King, who is also a Burisma partner and worked alongside Hunter Biden, also there. I'm just saying. Now, I'm not, you know, I'm not saying that they're shenanigans. I'm just saying that this is illustrative of how lefty she is and how she's going to go after this case. How she's going to be in this case, rather. That gives you some insight. Huh. So, just to, you know. It's interesting that the Obama appointee worked at the Hunter Biden law firm. Huh. The law firm? Wait, is that the law firm that gave Hunter that super sweet deal? The employment deal? No one else would have gotten? Yep, that's the one. Mm-hmm. Now, is she going to try to fast track this trial? Because it's set for May 2024. Now, here's some of the theories. Because depending on how this goes, I don't know. Some people are saying there's no way in hell this goes to trial because then they would have to do like discovery with all this stuff. And then maybe. But then at the same time, you have to realize that let's just say Trump won the primary and let's just say that he won the general. I know people are like polls, polls, polls. You're looking at national polls that are heavily skewed. You're not looking at state by state polls, which show an entirely different thing. Just going to say. Well, let's just say for the sake of argument, they wouldn't want him to pardon himself. I don't know if there's ever been, I don't think there's ever been a president that had to pardon themselves, but he could. You know, if he were theoretically, they don't want that to happen. So I think that they might expedite this. As just a general thought. I don't know what that looks like. I'm just, you know, I could be wrong, but I'm just thinking out loud here. Just seems like that's how that would go. That's how that would go. Now, these co-conspirators that are listed in here, let's get to this. Rudy Giuliani is one. He lost his mind about that, too, when he was talking about it. You also have, Sidney Powell. I got to tell you, I'm not a fan of Sidney Powell. I haven't been. I mean, I think that she was sloppy. I think that a number of the errors and a lot of the setback that they dealt with legally was because of Sidney Powell's sloppiness. You can get mad at me, but I'm not wrong. I mean, don't get mad at me for saying the sky's blue. I mean, hell, I mean, this is not when you're submitting forms to the court in certain states and you're misspelling things and you're not even like actually naming the correct town for a particular election result that you're contesting in that state. Yeah, that happened. Google that. And it didn't happen just one time. That's a major flipping issue. So when I say sloppy, I mean sloppy. You all didn't know that, did you? That happened. So, and I got to be real with you. A lot of conservative media didn't want to tell you because it made them look bad. That's what I'm saying. There's bias on both sides. I'm heavily biased for the Constitution. I'm a commentator. I make no mistake about it. But I got to be honest with you. So these co-conspirators, you had John Clark, John Eastman, Kenneth Cheeseborough. It's a very interesting name. A lot of people, I don't think they know number six yet. Lorraine says it's Boris Epstein. I don't know. We're going to get into how Mike Pence can't read the room and some of the other reactions to this as well. Golly. And then, I mean, it's totally normal, right? If you guys buy, I mean, you all buy burner phones, right? Your private citizen privilege with your motorcade when you go to Kroger, you go buy a burner phone to go and talk to people about the weather. That happens, right? All the time. What? Totally normal. It's not normal for you, Kane?
No, not really.
Burn the witch. Burn the witch.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I'd like to see this president. Who's compelling
him? Huh. So the Biden family, they're on vacation in Delaware. Because why not, right? He's on vacation in Delaware. They asked him a question about Oppenheimer. Did you see the video where it looked like a zombie apocalypse? He was going for what they called a romantic stroll on the beach at night under the supermoon with Jill. And all it showed was like this haunting kind of barely walking figure, the shadow, his silhouette against the giant headlights of a vehicle in the background. It was kind of weird. There was a story that came out. Let me pull this up. This was John Hassan had this story of how they actually were photoshopping. They're photoshopping Biden's pictures. And by they, I mean the media. They're actually doing this. And they're being shared by all of these, you know, strategists. So they have these photos going on, and it shows they smoothed his features. They totally Instagram filter him. They make it, you know how like some chicks go a little hard on it? And it's like, yeah, you know, it's supposed to be a secret. You're not supposed to look like marzipan, okay? You're not supposed to be as smooth as the fondant on a cake. Not supposed to be like that. That's weird looking. And they said that, and you can see the pictures, like it's he's overly smooth where it's weird. It's like they're trying to get all of his liver spots away, I guess, and his age brown spots or what. And they said they make him look tan and they give him a smile. And some people were like, that's just color correction. I speak Photoshop. That's not color correction. That's you literally smoothed him out. You whitened his teeth. You made his smile bigger. It's creepy. It's super creepy. They try to make him look younger. I mean, it is weird. You can see it, right? There's a huge difference for those people watching the simulcast. Juan put up a side-by-side. They whitened his teeth. They actually gave him a smile because you can only see like the bottom stubs of his teeth and the natural one. Yeah, they're doing everything that they can. You know, all war is deception. And that includes this battle over the White House. Stick with us. Second hour next.
Joe Biden did nothing, nothing, not even approximating improper, much less wrong or illegal.
It's wishful thinking. They're trying to create a scandal.
I think it's pretty clear, at least so far, there is nothing there.
House Republicans continue their search for any proof at all tying President Joe Biden to his son Hunter's business dealings.
Joe Biden had nothing to do with Hunter Biden's business dealings.
Because they want to dirty up Biden's name.
You know, Republicans have been trying to use Hunter Biden's behavior against the president.
Did not know about anything that Hunter Biden was doing.
Seeing that Biden was simply involved in his son's life in a personal capacity. Republicans from consistently trying to make this argument and create the illusion of some malfeasance being there.
Spoke to business associates of Hunter Biden to say hello, to have small talk, casual conversation.
Hunter Biden talked to his dad on the phone all the time. They talked basically every day. Sometimes Joe Biden would say hello to the people in the room if he popped in or on the phone or whatever.
It's all casual conversation, niceties, the weather.
They never discussed business. These were more of just cordial hello types of conversations.
You know, he loves his son. He just
I love my dead gay son.
He just loves his son. Any Heathers fans out there? Anyone? What?
I love my dead gay son.
Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. Top of this second hour. I just can't get enough.
I love my dead gay son.
It really was one of the best movies. Heathers was. Welcome back to the show. That's the just some of what, you know, some of the amazingness that came from the media on the defense of Joe and Hunter and their, I guess, however you want to describe this, you know, he did all this because he loved his son and wanted to support him.
Just an illusion.
Yeah, that's the illusion of access. You know, the illusion of 20 phone calls and how many dinners and millions of dollars. You know, just the illusion of it. Oh, my goodness. So we've been covering everything from the indictment to the ongoing fall. I just have to remark again, just so interesting how Kane, the indictment came legit the day on the heels of the Devin Archer discussion and the new revelations and the Biden family scandals. So much coinkydinks, so many coincidences. Just, it's amazing, is it not? So this, we talked also about some of the charges for this. We were talking about first also the criminalization of speech. Now there's a piece up now over at Chapter and Verse. Lorraine has the indictment, some of the charges described as well in there. And gets into, you know, the knowingly, you know, the mens rea aspect or, you know, the person knew that they were committing a crime, etc. He had that whole thing means, and I know Andy McCarthy had talked about this too, that means that Jack Smith would have to prove that Trump knew that he was lying, that the election wasn't stolen when he was saying the election was stolen. But then you're going to try to ding him for saying, I mean, it's so ridiculous. How do you prove that? I don't even know how you do that in court. This is Democrats trying to do what they couldn't do in impeachment. I mean, he, as Lorraine notes too, Smith could have said recklessly, but he didn't, because that would have meant lower penalties. So when you create this super high bar, when you establish this very high bar for yourself, it's a problem. You see how it's a problem for defense? Now, in paragraph three, here's what's so funny, because he's criminalizing him for free speech, and this gets into page six, seven, etc. But he also says, quote, the defendant had a right, like every American, to speak publicly about the election and to even claim falsely that there had been outcome determinative fraud during the election and that he had won. Okay, there you go. There's your case. Shut up, buddy. So he had the right to say it, but also I'm going to charge him. So that's why he keeps saying knowingly. Knowingly said. Like I said, if you do control F on the 45-page indictment, it comes up a frillion times. They also had the fake elector scheme. Now, I don't think that there's a lot of evidence in that. I think it, because this was the accusation that Giuliani and then one of the other, because there were the five named co-conspirators that they were saying, the five named co-conspirators, and that these individuals were going to send in, it was him and Kenneth Cheeseborough, that were going to send in fake electors, and they were going to try to force Congress to fight over it and all of this. And apparently Trump doesn't even understand. They thought, apparently even his people thought it was ridiculous. And that gets into, that's on page 26. Trump had apparently at one point asked an aide to figure out what the hell was going on. And his aides thought, this is so stupid. We don't even want to write this up. This is so it doesn't actually sound like he knew anything. So I don't know why you can charge him for that. That's just so weird. And then you had the Jeffrey Clark guy, the former assistant AG of Civil Division, who is involved in all of this as well. He was apparently in the indictment. It says he allegedly tried to blackmail then acting AG Rosen into sending out a letter validating the fake electors. And that 4 days before it gets in, it says 4 days before Congress's certification proceeding, co-conspirator four tried to coerce the acting deputy attorney general to sign and send the co-conspirators draft letter, which contained false statements to state officials and told them that the defendant was considering making co-conspirator number four the new acting attorney general, and that co-conspirator four would decline the defendant's offer if the acting attorney general and acting deputy attorney general would agree to send the proposed letter to the targeted states. And it says in the statement, or in the indictment, it says the Justice Department officials refused. And then they say, well, also into this is Trump's refusal to tell people to return home. We carried all this live. I mean, this all happened while we were literally on air. And I remember we carried, can you remember this? And we, because Trump was still speaking when the first reports came in of the rioting. And I remember we were carrying some of his remarks when the first reports came in of the riots. That's when we were like, and we didn't start getting any of that footage. I mean, I think we had already played Trump telling people to go home peacefully before we even showed that other footage, if memory serves. So this seems, I think this one is, it's what's weird is that this is, I think, the weakest case, but it will get a conviction because of where it is. I got to be honest with you. I'll be shocked if they don't convict him because it's D.C. I'm not talking about because of guilt or some preponderance of evidence. I'm talking about you're in Washington, D.C., and there's a reason why it's in this district. You're in Washington, D.C. You have a jury pool that is going to be well over 90, I think it's like 96% Democrat registered voters. You have a judge who's, as we talked about last hour, hardcore on the January 6th stuff, who worked at a firm that hired Hunter Biden to do nothing just because his last name was Biden. So, you know, it's fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. I don't know. We'll see. But there's it, this whole, it is absolutely wild. Listen to this. This is Andy McCarthy, Audio Soundbite 4, talking about the distortion of these statutes by Jack Smith. Listen.
I think, unfortunately, Brett, this is as weak as it was foretold to be. You see a lot of deceitful conduct. But the problem I think Jack Smith has is that Congress has not enacted statutes that directly criminalize the behavior that Smith is talking about. So what he has to do is distort statutes in order to try to pigeonhole the behavior into them.
I mean, there you have it. That is something else. That is something else. Listen to this. I got to play this. Audio soundbite 11. We're still seeing this kind of stuff pop up. This guy who is never going to amount to anything greater than a tool on CNN. Right? Is CNN? Yeah. Listen.
Not all the details of them and not how many of them. We knew that during the attack, Rudy Giuliani was still making calls. We knew that he was making that effort. I think he had called. I don't remember who it was at this point. And they said, I can't talk. I'm hunkered down here. And he's like, okay, well, you know, calls the next person. So, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of cold because you think of Rudy Giuliani, you know, America's mayor after 9/11, that's not only not caring about this really craziest attack since 9/11 to happen in this country.
There it is. There it is. The guy with his head too small for his body. It looks like it's stuffed into that suit. Like the collar looks too big for him. The tie looks too big for him. It's not all the way sitting down properly. I just have a major issue. Can I just, an aside, I get really distracted when I see smart-ass wannabes poorly dressed. Because I think if you're going to just try to throw authority or throw that kind of influence around, then you need to be smartly dressed, right? Then that means that your tie shouldn't be, you know, extravagantly wide. It means that your collar should lay flat. You know, your lapels should be, you know, straightened. Your collar should be laid flat. It shouldn't be bubbling up. And it shouldn't look like it's too small for your neck. You know, you shouldn't look like a Barbie that had its head fall off and then grandpa put it on too hard and pushed the head all the way down to the chest. And then the Barbie looks like it has no neck. You don't want to look like that. Only ladies out there, only you 90s and 80s kids know what I'm talking about. The struggle was real for us, right? Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was Adam Kinzinger. I forgot to tell you. Oh, you're still here. You might go now. So they're still, it's the worst, craziest attack since 9/11. Yeah, nothing else happened since then, Kane. Right. Yeah, there were no other terror attacks. Yeah. Benghazi, what? What? I don't even know. The Boston bombing, huh? Oh. I mean, you know, Fort Hood, what? I mean, seriously, dude? Jeez. All right, so a couple of other things. Let's get Audio Soundbite 8 prepared. Because, you know, Joe Biden, before he decided to go and zombie walk on the beach at night under the supermoon in Delaware, he was bragging about Bidenomics, right, Kane? Oh, yeah. Solved all the country's problems. Yeah. Guess what? You're no longer poor because we're ignoring it. Yay! Stop being poor, right? So Fitch downgraded our credit rating. This is hasn't happened since I was in high school. Listen.
We want to bring you this breaking news. Fitch has downgraded the U.S. credit rating to a AA from a AAA. They note the difference in governance between AA-rated countries versus AAA-rated countries. Also, the continuous or the many, many political showdowns surrounding the debt limit. We knew when the debt limit showdown was going on that Fitch was considering this downgrade, even if the debt limit was not breached. And so here we are with a downgrade of the U.S. credit rating to a AA+ from a AAA.
Wow, AA+ from a AAA. You know what's weird, Kane? So I was looking at the different states, their individual credit ratings. Am I incorrect in noting that a bunch of Republican states like Florida and Georgia have higher credit ratings than the United States as a total? Is that correct? Huh. That's so Florida's credit rating is higher than Texas. Yeah, and Texas is, yeah. And the states that, interestingly enough, what party runs these states again?
Republicans run those states, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I was just wondering. I tweeted this out last night while I retweeted it. You know that when Kamala won and it was that it's a viral video and photo of her on the phone. We did it, Joe. Yeah, that's what they did. Yay, you downgraded our credit rating. So this, I mean, you can't really lie to people anymore when you see stuff like this happen in real time. So they said that the expected fiscal deterioration over the next 3 years, and of course our general government, our debt, because we can't stop the spending. So it's eroded total confidence in any kind of fiscal management that we have, obviously. So I don't know. This is what the second, I think this was the second downgrade in the history of the United States. The first one was in, what, 94? But it also, I think, shows, and they're going to try to use this with debt limit, by the way. Always pay attention to the timing, because you have the House, right before they went on their six-week break back to their home districts, they've been going back and forth over government spending, et cetera, et cetera. And Fitch cited, according to New York Times, the repeated debt limit, political standoffs, and last-minute resolutions and cutting the rating. Honestly, they're using this as game. They're using this. They're trying to big league you. Don't.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Justin Trudeau and his wife Sophie have announced their separation after 18 years. They said, we made the decision to separate. I guess she got tired of being with a beta Castro. That's all I got to say about that. It's true. Why are people gross? NBC says that the Lake Tahoe foot fondler who broke into two women's homes as they slept is in custody. Mark Anthony Gonzalez, 26 years old, was arrested on burglary and battery. He broke into these two condos last month and rubbed women's feet while they slept. They woke up in the middle and confronted him, and he fled. Oh, dude, he'd be leaving in a body bag. Body bag, because that's nasty. Nasty. The jury has recommended death, the death penalty, for the Pittsburgh Tree of Life synagogue killer. They came out with this today. It was the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history. More of the show coming up. Stick with us. Back after this.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
But one of the things I mentioned in that statement, I think, is important to point out. You know, the reality is a Republican, a D.C. jury, would indict a ham sandwich and convict a ham sandwich if it was a Republican ham sandwich. I think Americans need to be able to remove cases out of D.C. I think the juries are stacked. I think that they're going to want to convict people that they disagree with. Or at a minimum, you should be able to draw a jury pool from across the entire country. That is really what's at stake in terms of, do we have a single standard of justice, or do we have a track of justice where if you're connected to the swamp, you get off, whether it's Hunter Biden, whether it was the guy Durham tried to prosecute, or are we going to live under a single rule of law? And I think we have to reestablish a single rule of law in this country.
There you go. That's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, whose credit rating is higher than that of the United States, according to Fitch. Thanks, Bidenomics, who weighs in on really the Democrat DOJ and this ridiculous indictment from yesterday. Welcome back. Dana Loesch here, bottom of the second hour on Wednesday. Some people were like, is he going to, would he pardon? He'd already said that he'd pardon. He already said that he thought it was dumb that anybody would send, you know, I mean, because Trump is in his late 70s, that he'd send that, you know, a former president to jail, and he's already talked about how stupid. I mean, does he need to draw a picture? I mean, I don't understand why there were, I think there were bots, but there were a couple of people who were like, wait, we did that. Mike, are you high? Because I literally played the audio and we talked about the show. I've seen the video. I don't know what people are getting angry about. But man, Republican ham sandwich. That is true. It is very true. So we've gone over this indictment. We've been going over a lot of stuff here because it's, you know, it's just dominating all the news, obviously. But it is, I mean, it's crazy because it came right on the heels of the Devin Archer stuff. Now, I have totally got another development for you. Now, this has to do with some of the Biden stuff. Oof. Do I really want to? Let me just ask everybody this. Are y'all like all done eating your lunches and all that stuff?
The ham sandwiches?
Yeah. Are y'all done with your Republican ham sandwiches? Are y'all done? Because I'm sorry to do this to you. So here's what's up. You got the people who got the preppy mail were like, oh, we know what's coming. We know exactly because we saw it. So you guys remember, let's go back. Do you remember when there was the Ashley Biden diary thing? This is the daughter that Joe Biden had with Jill. So you had the Ashley Biden diary that she left it in a, like in a mattress in a flop house. Sidebar. I'm going to stop myself. I know you want me to finish it, but why do they leave things everywhere? What is with these damn kids that they're leaving their stuff everywhere? Now, what gets me, she's like my age, has her, you know, it's a grown woman. She's leaving her diary of drugs and sexual escapades and showers with dad in her diary, left it in a drug house, flop house mattress. And then James O'Keefe got it. And everyone's like, that's not her diary. It's not her diary. But the FBI raided them, took the diary. It's not her diary, but the FBI is going to raid you and take it anyway. Okay. And then they're like, you stole it. But no, you left it in a, flop house mattress. So she confirmed on an audio recording that the diary that she had abandoned is hers, apparently. And that there were other things that were left behind there. And the audio recording, they said that the family had known the people who rented out the house and she stayed in one of the bedrooms. And on the voicemail, you know, it was said that the diary's crazy. I think it's worth taking a look at. It's, you know, all this other stuff. And Ashley, I mean, yeah, because it was crazy. Because she had sex addictions, drug addictions. She wrote in her diary her dad took showers with her when she was younger. And she said that she would wait until late at night to take showers to avoid her dad getting in there. This is weird, guys. It's weird. Quote, diary pages 67 through 68. I'm so afraid of him coming into the shower with me that I've waited until late at night to take a shower. Oh my God. Guys, come on. Okay. Because remember, they got raided. O'Keefe got raided. The FBI took it. They tossed all the stuff in James O'Keefe's apartment around. They took his stuff. One agent told him he wasn't being detained. They took a 47 recording devices, phones, laptops, thumb drives, everything. And the, I mean, they're still apparently like, okay, they're still battling over it. This is just wild. So can we just have a little quick, obvious conversation here? Okay, so you have all the kids are messed up. I mean, I'm sure we don't know anything about Bo, but I'm sure he was probably hiding some demons too at this point, right? I mean, how do you, is he just the one kid who wasn't? I don't know. You have the son and daughter, the other kids that apparently were really messed up on drugs and all this other stuff, have serious issues. And it's weird that they have all these hangups with sex. And then she has something like that in a diary. And the FBI apparently thought it was real enough and dangerous enough that they raided somebody and took all their stuff. And there's just no transparency or due process. Do you think that, I don't know. It sounds on its face. Let me just tell you what I think it sounds like. It sounds like there was abuse. On its face, that's what it sounds like. If you hear that from anywhere else, what do you think? You have a family where all the kids are all messed up and they're all on drugs and they all have serious issues. And then the daughter has a diary. She talks about her dad doing this. I mean, what would you think? Come on, guys. Right? You can't think that, though, here. Why? Because it's the president. And? I mean, Kane, got thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Explains all the dogs' problems, too.
Well, their dogs the bite everybody. Family.
Yeah. It's just bad owners.
Bad owners.
And bad parents.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's weird. That is really weird to me. And the fact that you can't believe that there's not more of a discussion over it. Doesn't that, I mean, it's like textbook red flags for abusive situations, right? Who writes that kind of stuff in their diary like that?
People trying to get over trauma.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, it seems really odd. Just seems weird. Now I wanted to share this story also. Our subscribers over at Chapter and Verse got this. Did you know that the media ignored the story of a thwarted school shooting? Mm-hmm. This took place just this week in Memphis. There's a Jewish school in Memphis where their security measures actually stopped an attempted murderer on Monday. And the whole Do Something lobby and all of its media are totally silent about this. So the suspect is 33 years old. What ended up happening is the suspect, because the school has, you know, it's a hardened school. They have a CCTV. They have, you know, security system, door locking system, all this stuff. And so they reported, they had called out to law enforcement initially because there was this 33-year-old suspect. He was armed with a handgun and he tried to enter the school. And they saw his red pickup truck already on the closed circuit security footage. And they got like a picture of him as he was entering. Like you can go into the first door and like you're in this foyer, this like, you know, foyer kind of area. And you are in between these interlocking doors. And so you can't get past that first door because they would have to buzz you in, et cetera, you know, all that. And then it has like the security, like the thick security glass and all that stuff. A lot of schools have that. And so they saw this guy come in. They got a picture of his red pickup truck that was parked outside. They got the image of him and they immediately called police. When he could not get into the school, he fled. And he had his like gun out. I mean, he wasn't, you know, just carrying, he had his gun out. And so students and the full staff, thankfully, were not yet back to school after summer break. But I don't know if this dude knew that. So the man, he was pulled over 3 miles from the school and he got out of his truck and confronted police with his handgun. So they shot him, obviously. He was listed in critical condition at an area hospital. Now, here's where it starts getting odd. So the 33-year-old is apparently a former student of the school or a past student of the school. His classmates had told the press, his former classmates, that he struggled with mental health issues for a number of years. Now, this is where it gets even odder, because you're probably wondering at first, well, why is this 33-year-old man? What connection does he have to the school? Why is he just going into the school with a handgun? This is very odd. I agree with you. But there's now, then it comes out, oh, he's a former student. Okay, there's some, all right, maybe there's a motive. We'll wait for this. So 20 years earlier, the suspect's mother had called 911 because her husband, the father of the suspect, came home and was behaving, quote, erratically. He appeared to be emotionally distraught. He was waving a gun around, pointing it to his head at times. He was on medication for bipolar disorder. And so the wife, the mother, called 911 and told police, I think he's only going to hurt himself, but he's got a gun. He's, you know, distraught. He's on medication for bipolar, isn't, you know, all of this. So police arrive. They respond to the 911 call. And they see the husband brandishing a gun, alternately holding it to his head. Now, I don't know if commands were given to drop the gun. I didn't see that in the court documents, which I'll get, you know, they're court documents. I'll get to more on that. And they shot and killed him. The mother said that she and her minor son, so the son, who is now the suspect, saw it. She said they were in the zone of danger when the husband was killed. So she filed a lawsuit against the police department and it was dismissed in 2010 because she was trying to, she filed suit on the grounds of, I mean, really, I think the only thing that she could find a file on was targeted harassment. And they said that it was her inability to prove that the officer's conduct complained of in the case was, according to the court papers, motivated by considerations of race, color, religion, ancestry, or national origin, end quote. So this 33-year-old suspect had mental health issues, a family history of mental health issues, and there's still a lot of unanswered questions. He's in critical condition at an area hospital. So how did he get his firearm? And was he ever committed to a mental health institution? Mental health or mental illness alone does not mean a person is violent. I mean, most of the time, the majority are only violent to themselves. But considering that he walked armed into a school with obvious intent and confronted police with a gun after, I mean, he was violent. But he had no criminal history beyond a traffic incident, a traffic offense. But he did he have a violent history at home? I mean, there's a lot of questions. But thankfully, the school that he had targeted had hardened itself. They had security protocol in place. They had a very quick thinking staff and fast acting police, and they prevented tragedy. And notice nobody in the media is acknowledging this. Nobody's talking about this. If it really was about hardening soft targets, this would be a consideration for reporting, and it's not. So where's the motivation? Like, how many kids is it going to take for them to acknowledge that, yeah, maybe having security in schools like this is helpful?
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right, so we got to talk about this real quick. Mac and cheese suit. A Florida judge tossed a $5 million lawsuit over microwavable macaroni and cheese. The suit claims that the company misled the public about the time it takes to prepare the microwavable mac and cheese cups. It's Velveeta's, apparently. It was literally a West Palm Beach-based law firm that filed the suit on behalf of a Florida woman back in November. They were saying that the Kraft Heinz Food Company violated federal law by saying the mac and cheese cups take 3.5 minutes to prepare, saying the time limit does not include the time it takes to remove the lid, add the water, and stir in the cheese sauce. A Miami district judge tossed the lawsuit because the woman's a moron. And she should be publicly named so we can all make fun of her and point and laugh, because that's dumb. What? What is the? Who hurt you? What's the matter with you? Jeez. I'm going to file. Who does that? You realize like how much money that takes like to do what she just did?
Not all microwaves are the same wattages either, just so everyone knows.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, literally not everything is the same. That's so goofy. And who, can I just ask, who makes microwavable mac and cheese besides like teenagers at home? Right. Who does that? Like, this is a grown woman making mac and cheese in the microwave in a cup. You know, those taste horrible.
Child abuse.
Yeah. Like, is she making it for herself or her kids? Because those are horrible and that's horrible. Yeah. I don't have anything else to add. I'm just disappointed. Also, let's see here. We got a couple of other ones. I'm going to pull this. All right. So, is this this is it. All right, hang on. We've had a number of incidents on planes as of late. So this woman, Florida woman, 32-year-old Clinae Cameron, was on an incoming Southwest flight. She's Florida woman going to Nashville. And as it was taxiing to gate 5, a passenger was using her phone when Cameron suddenly began to scream at her and tell other passengers that she has a red screen on her phone and they were all in danger and not safe. And the passengers were trying to assist the woman, Cameron, back to her seat. As the other passenger began to exit the plane, Cameron blocked her way, became verbally aggressive and abusive, and they had to be separated by flight attendants. And then Cameron was charged with assault for placing the victim in fear and resisting arrest because she tried to run away from multiple officers back down to the ramp until she was able to be detained. So she was booked in a Metro Nashville, and for resisting arrest and assault, she's free on a $4,000 bond. What is happening? Stop taking whatever you're taking, your Xanax or whatever, and then drinking before y'all get on planes. Ladies, quit. Or just don't fly. What is happening with this? So, have you ever typed Florida Man followed by your birthday into the browser?
What?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on.
Yeah. So, if you type Florida Man and then your birthday into, like, a browser, then you can pull up, like, a story, and that's your Florida Man story. So mine is a Florida man. This is a little older one, but this is what was pulled up. A Florida man was arrested because he slapped his girlfriend with a pizza slice. That's my Florida man story for my birthday. What is yours? Did you Google Kane in your birthday?
Yeah.
What'd you get?
I did. Mine says hot sauce saves Florida man after car crashes into Taco Bell.
Wow. I'm like actually really interested in that story.
I know.
Like I love hot sauce, but how does it save lives? That's fascinating. So that's your Florida man story. Steve, tomorrow you got to type yours in. I'm curious to know what yours is. All right, coming up, third hour. We got all the updates. Some of these conspirators in the indictment are speaking out. Also, how is it that people don't know that Mark Wahlberg is Marky Mark from the Good Vibration song?
Well, just to start with what I heard, Brett, that was one of the most demagogic presentations I've ever seen in a high-profile criminal case. Anyone who listened to that, any normal person reacting to that would assume that Trump was alleged to have carried out the Capitol riot. The entire presentation that he made was not about what the core charges in his case are. It was about the Capitol riot and the security personnel who were injured in the Capitol riot and who had to fight to defend the Capitol riot. And then you turn to his indictment. He's not charged with the Capitol riot. So if that is what he has to resort to in order to sell his case to the public, I think that's very telling in terms of what of how compelling his case is.
So that is Andy McCarthy talking about that remark from the really Jack Smith. I'm like, how do I forget the Jack Smith name? Good grief. But he's right. It was a weird, entirely weird thing. The indictment, we've been talking about this for the show, on and off throughout the show. We've also been hitting other things. Welcome back, by the way. Dana Lash here with you, top of this third hour. And on August 2nd, we're starting August like this. This is how they choose to start August, guys. How they choose to do it. So this is wild because it's, you know, an attack on free speech. There's all kinds of stuff in here that doesn't make any sense. And I don't know, like, I was looking at some of this the indictment, and one of the, what they are calling, like, one of the co-conspirators in this 45-page indictment says he's not backing down. John Eastman, he says he's defiant, vows no plea deal if convicted, and he'll appeal what he says is a misleading indictment. He was apparently, so Eastman was one of the legal advisors that was working with Trump to respond to some of the election irregularities. And that's what, and he was arguing that, and Pence was the presiding officer of the certification. He was saying, well, he had the authority to send back elector states for further review, etc. Let me just like stop right here and really quickly in less than, you know, a minute and a half, explain exactly what this particular part was all about. So the election process, states run their own elections. They also come up with ways to make the determinations that and the regulations about how to ensure the validity of the ballots and to uphold the security of their systems, right? So that, you know, it can't be compromised. And every state, that's part of their constitutional right. The Constitution's incredibly clear that it's supposed to, and the founders were quite clear about the decentralization of the voting process so as to prevent one fell swoop theft, right? So each state has their own, they have their 10th Amendment right, their own state sovereignty to determine how they're going to hold their elections. Now, in order to have other states accept the results that you have in your state, you know, if you're a state and I'm a state and I want you to acknowledge the results of the election that I run, you know, you want to make sure that I have in place some protections to make sure to uphold the credibility, the validity of the ballots and the election system. So you have signature matching and you have, you're checking the dates on any ballots. You have a limitation for mail-in ballots, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you have all of these protections in place and everyone comes to an agreement that, okay, because of these protections, we're each going to acknowledge because one state's outcome will affect the total. So we'll acknowledge each other's outcomes provided we have these protections that you choose in the system that you run in place. So that's what we're talking about here. And the fact that after lockdown, or during lockdown rather, there were a lot of states that had suspended some of the protections for the convenience of voting during lockdown. You had some states that decided to do away with signature matching. Some states just they weren't even having dates on ballots. They were having drop boxes where you could just throw ballots in without any way to verify any kind of ballot verification to make sure that the ballot was cast during the actual period that the election was held. These things are kind of important. And so the argument was never, we're going to toss out votes. The argument was never, we're going to exclude from consideration the results from a state. The argument was always, can we review, can we pause and make sure that the states that had actually gone against their own state constitution to make non-legal changes to their voting processes, can we just double check to make sure that because they weren't able to verify dates on ballots or because they didn't have signature matching, that they are in fact legitimate as claimed, and then go from there. And then if it's all, you know, on the up and up, fine, then let's go. That was always the argument. And for the life of me, I don't understand why there was anything to object to in that. Now, no one had the authority at that point to say, oh, we got to toss these out. You can review, but it's done. So that's the whole point of it. And so this gets into how some were saying, well, Pence had the, as the presiding officer, you know, had the authority to send stuff back for further review, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have these other conspirators. Now, Pence had his own statement, and he also rejected Eastman's interpretation of the 1887 Electoral Count Act. And so they, this whole argument, I don't think that Pence helped himself when he came out. I don't know if you saw some of this, but he had a tweet that he had out there, and it says, quote, I had a series of tweets, quote, today's indictment, he wrote this yesterday at 7 p.m., quote, today's indictment serves as an important reminder. Anyone who puts themselves over this Constitution should never be president of the United States. He says, I will have more to say about the government's case after reviewing the indictment. The former president is entitled to the presumption of innocence, but with this indictment, his candidacy means more talk about January 6th and more distractions. As Americans, candidacy means less attention paid to Biden's disastrous economic policies, et cetera, et cetera. Our country is more important than one man, constant to blah, 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 blah. He says, as president, I would not yield an inch. And well, he's not going to be president, so I don't even know why you're saying that. You don't have a shot in hell of winning. Now, apparently, did you see in the indictment, he had taken notes. Pence had taken notes throughout the thing. I don't know why he had to start off with, the indictment serves as a report and a reminder. Anyone who puts themselves over the Constitution should not be president of the United States. I don't know what that means. What does he mean with that? Like, I told you before, I'm very straightforward because I'm not going to be like the fake commentators out there. We've grown our audience organically, so I have no reason to be afraid of my own audience. And you guys appreciate the transparency and honesty. You guys know where I stand on the idea of any kind of stolen election. I don't think that there's enough evidence to substantiate. I believe absolutely in voter fraud. As I said, I've had to literally fight to have people actually taken off my address who voted illegally. But whether it rocks an entire election, you have to have evidence. I need evidence for that. I need a lot of, I mean, that's a serious thing, and I need serious evidence. And I'm not going to say that there's not enough to disprove massive amounts either. That's the thing. So here's the point with Pence, though, is I feel like he doesn't understand what I just got done explaining to you as it relates to the electoral votes in each state running their own process, because that is a legitimate concern that people had. Like, I mean, for instance, when Georgia amended their state constitution through their legislature about making permanent, remember how people were freaking out saying that, oh, their voting restrictions were ridiculous. They were only temporary restrictions or temporary lifts on restrictions for the purpose of the lockdown during the pandemic. And many of them they made permanent. And so that's a major concern, right? Like if you're in a different state from Georgia and your state followed through and made sure that your signatures matched and made sure that your ballots had dates and all that stuff, and if you're being told that you have to accept the results of another state's election outcome, well, then don't you have the right to ask what protections did you have in place to make sure that these are legitimate votes? Why is that a big thing? Why do people get so pissed off when you ask that? Why?
Because it makes it hard to cheat.
I mean, are you in a republic? Are you a free citizen? Are we supposed to be shamed from asking questions? Because I reject and I will violently reject that kind of gaslighting. So I got a problem with that. And I feel like when Pence says this kind of stuff, he is not reading the room. If you're trying to, who is he trying to reach out to? It doesn't sound empathetic towards the concerns of the people that he's seeking to represent. You can do that, and you can disagree with Trump without also trying to hit or sound dismissive of the concerns that maybe some of his most ardent supporters have. And that's what Pence misses every single time. I've never seen anybody more tone deaf in my life. It's wild.
And he says over and over again, you know, our country is more important than one man, and nobody's over the Constitution. Now, I do think that, yes, I mean, there's a couple of different ways you can look at this. Two ways you can look at it. Yes, that it means more talk about January 6th and all that other stuff. The media, though, is always going to find a distraction. If it's not that, it's going to be something else. I also do think that all of the indictments and all this other stuff, I mean, the stuff with Mar-a-Lago, that case is a lot harder to, with some of those, some of the descriptions in the indictment. He messed up in a couple instances here, you guys. But this is ridiculous. This is all stupid. This is all Victorian freak show. It's all theater. But the point is that there are people out there who rightly and correctly and justifiably feel like they have been bulldozed by all of these institutions. I mean, they've been targeted. I mean, hell, I had a damn Democrat sitting in Congress that said I was a domestic terrorist because I support the Second Amendment. I get it. I know exactly what it's like to have a government agency look at you. I mean, I know all this. I'm right there with everybody else. To not sound empathetic towards that, how are you going to represent people if you don't know what the hell they're going through? Don't sit here and be like, as president, I would not yield an inch. You already did. What are you talking about? You already did because you won't even acknowledge it. Stop. One other thing here. You guys know, well, should I wait on this? Because I cannot stand fakery. You guys know how I feel about that, right? That's why I always tell you exactly right out front where exactly I am. So there are no misconceptions. And the reason everybody knows things about me or where I stand is because I tell you. We got to talk about the fakery going on with one candidate. And then seemingly trying to kind of rewrite some J6 remarks history. We're going to get into all that and more. And also talk about why Gen Z, particularly on the Dana Show staff, does not realize that Mark Wahlberg, the actor, is also Marky Mark from Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. We're going to have this conversation. I am shocked. Shocked. Kane and I are shook. Shaken. Shaketh. Shooketh.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Oh, we're going to talk more about this story. Apparently, Hunter Biden and his entitled influencer wife trashed their $4.2 million Venice Beach rental house. The wife was described as rude and entitled. They left the property in disarray and disrepair and stiffed the owner for apparently over $80,000 in outstanding rent. The landowner, apparently via a source, said that Hunter and Melissa were horrible tenants. They stiffed the owner. They left the house in horrible condition. Wow. 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 Not surprised at all. Also, the Lizzo lawsuit. She's on the verge of getting canceled. And I'm just like, really, I'm done with this broad. They said the former staff of support dancers accused her of sexual harassment, fat shaming, a bunch of stuff that I can't even repeat on air. And apparently Beyonce left her off some kind of thank you thing. So that's official. She's like apparently like persona non grata now, excommunicado. A mystery firm that's purchased 55,000 acres surrounding a major United States Air Force base for $800 million is now suing farmers for inflating the price of land amid fears that it's all owned by a hostile power. This is in California. Flannery Associates bought these acres of land, acreage 55,000. The anonymous group of investors is suing all the local farmers for price gouging. One of the local lawmakers there says the suit is targeted to attack and bankrupt the farmers. Of course it is. It's lawfare. And it's all around Travis Air Force Base. And they've been purchasing all of this since 2018. And so now they're suing the local farmers for $510 million. They said they, quote, acted in flagrant disregard of federal and state law by conspiring to inflate the value of the land it sold them. Well, I don't know. I just don't. Is it China? I mean, it sounds like it's China. Yeah. The Disney World District that's now controlled after the whole fight with the Florida governor is now getting rid of all of its DEI garbage, including the DEI programs and the DEIA Chief Diversity Officer of Happiness and Feelings and Sprinkles and Sunshine staffers. Yeah. So that was announced yesterday out of Orlando. This was all with the new agenda for the state, curtailing these non-academic everything or non-business everything. This was the board that enjoyed anti-capitalist perks that other soft Republicans and Democrats had given them before. Mm-hmm. So coming up, more on the entitled Hunter Biden. And Gen Z and Marky Mark, what's up?
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
You got to be an expert in knowing the guy, and he was the guy that was the expert in knowing the guy.
He was an expert in knowing the guy. Right. And who was the guy he knew?
Well, he knew a lot of people, but obviously there was some familiar, his brother, his father, some of his father's siblings. So he knew a lot of people. And obviously
the whole fam-damly. Oh yeah, the whole fam-damly, Kane. It's a family endeavor.
Just an illusion, though.
Ooh, just an illusion, though. That's Tucker Carlson talking to Devin Archer. And that's all that just hit. Very, very interesting. I mean, you got the guy who's the business partner saying, yeah, all this stuff happened. There you go. All of it happened. What are you going to do? And Democrats like, it's just because he loved his son. He loved it. He loved his boy. That's all it was. He was just very, Kane, you got it. I told you I was going to play this till it goes out of style.
I love my dead gay son.
I mean, he loves his son, guys. He just did it.
I love my dead gay son.
Anyway, so welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here. Yeah. Bottom of this third hour. Boy, oh boy, I'm telling you, that the revelations that are coming out of this, and Devin Archer clearly is not done talking. He's just going to keep on. He's not done talking, and he shouldn't be, because he's like, yeah, he was the guy who was the expert at knowing the guy. Who was the guy? His brother, his father? Yeah. They're all in on it. So he has one. He's got one excerpt. It's like an 11-minute excerpt that he's got out, and that was just part of his discussion with Devin Archer. And then meanwhile, hurry up, get an indictment out. Get the indictment out. Mike Pence is still out there talking about it. Do we want to play this? I'd rather talk about what in the world is going on with Gen Z right now. But Mike Pence is out there like, we're still blah blah blah. Not helping. Okay, so when we came in, Kane and I are shooketh. Now, Steve is a millennial. So Steve is like, I get it. I get you. And we were, because I have every month, I have a playlist of all the bumper tracks that we play on the show, right? And so usually the songs that I play per segment are either additional commentary on the topics that are in that segment or just that we like the song, And we're kind of Kane and I are like in a 90s mood right now. So we were like going back and like looking at 90s hip hop and some of the 90s, what's on the pop charts and all this. And oh my gosh, I forgot about Marky Mark. Now, Steve knows who Marky Mark is, right? He knows who Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch is. He knows. I mean, he works, he's DJ Fun Uncle. He hates when we say that. But, he does that. That's, a thing. He's also that. He's also into music. And so he knows who he is. And all of us who were like 80s and 90s kids, we know who Marky Mark is, but I only just today realized that Gen Z only knows him as Mark Wahlberg from Transformers.
Actor.
The actor. They had no idea he had a whole musical and modeling career before this. Wait, I'm going to further blow your minds. Did you guys know that his older brother is Donnie Wahlberg from New Kids on the Block? What? They were like, what? Like, what do you mean? Marky Mark?
The Wahlburgers guy?
Yeah, the Wahlburgers guy? Like, yeah, he's... And then one of the Gen Zers hummed the Beach Boys' Good Vibration song and was like, you mean that song? No. Uh-uh. Not that song.
That's the Beach Boys.
They're gonna... Kane, I just now had a horrible realization.
Uh-oh.
So, we grew up in the 90s. We came of age, right, as it were, in the 90s. You know, I graduated high school in 96. Is the stuff that we would have listened to in the 90s. Remember how there was an oldies station when we were younger be in the car with our parents and our parents would turn it to the oldies station.
Right.
And they'd be like, yeah, this song.
Right.
Have those roles reversed?
Yeah.
It's all
cyclical.
What?
Yep.
I am shooketh. I just can't believe that they didn't know. You know, like, I love Mark Wahlberg. I can't believe they didn't know that was Marky Mark. Right. And I literally noticed. I can't even believe this. Hang on. Because you know how I have, like, my email out at danalash.com. So every now and then people will send it. So somebody doesn't know who New Kids. How do you not know who New Kids on the Block are? Right. What? They don't know who Donnie. What? Jenny McCarthy is Donnie's wife. Jenny McCarthy is Mark Wahlberg's sister-in-law. Right. I see things today where it's like Gen Z are shocked. They did not know that the mom from Home Alone is also the mom from, and it's S-C-H-I-T-T-S, Schitt's Creek, the show. They had no idea. I am shooketh, Kane. I don't even know. I don't know what to do. Also, she was also Lydia Deetz in Beetlejuice. They didn't know that either. It's just shocking to me. I don't know. But yeah, that was a great, you knew that, Steve, because you're in music though, but you knew he was. You knew that song.
Tim on Marky Mark?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was big because that one video, he took his shirt off. He went Calvin Klein thing, remember that?
Yeah, he was like, yeah, that one shirt, that one video. Yeah, all the ladies made sure everybody remember that
We actually remember that. You just looked it up.
No, he's a millennial. He probably...
He wasn't born when that was going on.
I think that song came out.
Were you born?
That song.
He's got older siblings, though.
Yeah, but that song was out before I was born.
Yeah, he's got older siblings, though.
Right.
So see that, like, so they maybe knew. So, because I think one of his older siblings is, like, our age. So, like,
That Hangin' Tough video. Remember New Kids on the Block, that Hangin' Tough song?
Okay, now that was way before his time, because I was in, like, sixth grade when New Kids on the Block was the thing.
Right.
But I remember that Hangin' Tough.
Oh, yeah. That's how they all, I guess, got their money and launched their acting careers in their hamburger places.
I do have a bit of criticism, though, about some of their lyrics. Because there was one song where it said, and I'm trying to remember what it was. It was about their summer vacation, and they went on summer vacation. And the Jonathan one, the one that had the curly-headed dark hair, his lyric was, "We met a lot of people and girls." And I'm like, what? Because they're the same. Okay. Just that always stuck with me because even when I heard it when I was in sixth grade, I was like, what? That's the sixth or seventh grade.
Was that the summertime song?
I think it may have been. Yeah. So. I think it may have been. So speaking of funny stuff and the primary and all, you know, Mike Pence going out there. I saw this fun little tidbit today. So I did not realize that that Vivek Ramaswamy, because he played this. Listen to the audio soundbite 9. Go ahead and play this because I got some questions about this.
The allegations in this indictment fall flat. It is wrong and incorrect and inaccurate to place blame for what happened on January 6th at the feet of Donald Trump.
Okay. So this is my problem. But so this story came out today and it was in his own book. That I guess nobody read this book. It was last year, Nation of Victims, where he literally went off on Trump over January 6th and blamed him. I got an issue. Like, so which is it? You can't have it both. You really can't have it both ways on this. He wrote on Twitter right after the riot, quote, "What Trump did last week was wrong, downright abhorrent, plain and simple. I've said it before." He tweeted that. In his book, he had written about this as well. And I don't like he said it was a dark day for democracy. And he said, of course, you know, I'm referring to Donald Trump, et cetera, et cetera. How do you reconcile those two things? How do you lay the blame at his feet after January 6th and then now that this indictment, this goofy indictment, and it looks advantageous to not go along with it as a primary contender. Now you're going to say that it falls flat and it can't be laid at his feet. You were one of the people that helped lay it there. So what gives, dude? Man, you're like the worst stalking horse ever. Like, if you're going to get a stalking horse for your campaign, get one where the guy hasn't slammed you and is in a book, on Twitter, said all this stuff, where he hasn't run you down into a hole. So that way, when he comes up and tries to defend you, people can't go, well, wait a minute. The hell is this? Why were you tweeting this? Why did you say this? Why did you rate this? Why? What? Am I wrong here? Because I feel like I'm not. Right? I mean, this checks out.
And it wasn't like super long ago.
Yeah.
It was just a couple of years.
I got questions, man. I got some questions. I mean, he said that, he goes, quote, it was a dark day for democracy. The loser of the last election refused to concede the race, claimed the election was stolen, raised hundreds of millions of dollars from loyal supporters, and is considering running for executive office again. I'm referring, of course, to Donald Trump. Conservatives have their own victimhood complexes these days. We're all a nation of victims now. This is his book. This is Vivek Ramaswamy's book. And then he, like, blasts him and said that Trump was, he called Trump the new Stacey Abrams. Oh, okay. And he goes, his claims are as weak as Abrams. And then went on and went on and on, blah, 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 blah. And it's one thing, by the way, to disagree with him on claims about the election and fraud and all of this. It's another thing to be like, you're the new Stacey Abrams and also you're responsible for this. I mean, that's way different. You know, that's a, I'm just curious how you're going to reconcile that. I don't know. But he's been working really, really hard during the primary. How are you writing that? And then you're on television calling out every other candidate saying, are you going to pardon him? I would pardon him. You were one of the guys that was slamming him. I've had him on the show before, although I think he is super mad at me because Dave Rubin, I thought he was disingenuous when he went after Dave Rubin. And I'm like, wait a minute, hold up here. But guys, this is like which side of the mouth is he talking on? Like I said, I if you're going to pick somebody, you know, to like fill out the field for you, and I kind of think that with him, I think that he's, you know, doing that to benefit that campaign. I just think he was like the worst guy to pick. And I just can't take him seriously on this issue. I mean, that's a big, so how do you get around that? How do you, is anybody going to ask him about this?
Yeah, I was going to say, has he addressed it? Because I think that's part of the way of getting around it.
I mean, because he says it's false and it's a mistake to blame January 6th on Donald Trump. And then he was like, and then he goes, it's a bad mistake of leadership. And then he like slammed him and said the opposite on Twitter. I don't know. I don't know how you... But do people not know that Twitter's forever? Well, mostly. And when you write things in a book, that kind of stays in there. Again, it's like one thing to disagree with someone on whether or not you think that there was voter fraud, but it's an entire thing to say that someone is the Stacey Abrams of the party, and then that to intimate that they're actually responsible for J6 or for the rioting. So I don't know. This is just seems really like he's trying to have it both ways. And I think that a lot of people are letting him off for it. Just, you know, gotta say.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
You and Joseph Ziegler came out as whistleblowers and testified before that House committee. Are there others who have yet to come out who are willing?
Well, I think there's lots of people with information that can shine light on this. And House Ways and Means Committee has requested those names. We provided those names. And we, the government and the people of the United States demand that the government and look gets to the bottom of this. They need to talk to all these people. They can't just allow DOJ to not give access to people. I mean, for example, the FBI, SSA, that testified for the House Ways and Means Committee, he was given a letter the Sunday before from DOJ basically telling him not to talk. And, you know, I know that he could have confirmed additional material facts on this investigation. And, he did confirm that the FBI headquarters notifying the transition team and Secret Service, but really that was the only thing that he was able to speak about. So there are so many other people, and we've provided that to the House Ways and Means Committee, and we just hope that they follow the leads and talk to the people they need to talk to get to the bottom of it, because our tax system and the American people deserve it.
Okay.
Oh, that's Gary Shapley, who's saying that, yeah, there's a lot of other people that would, speak out. They're being threatened. Wait, I thought the left liked whistleblowers. Maybe not.
They used to.
Interesting. Fascinating. Yeah, they used to love them. I guess now they don't anymore. It's incredibly unfortunate because, these are people who are having their lives ruined, and they're just simply trying to bring truth to the American people and let them know what these weaponized agencies are doing. That is something else. Make sure that you sign up for the newsletter over at Chapter and Verse. Oh, here's the tweet. That tweet from Vivek is up. Oh my gosh, it's so bad. Oh, it's the tweet where he was slamming Trump for J6. Oh my God, you guys, what? So I'm going to put that in your newsletter. Sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Sorry, Kane, today's stupidity.
All right, Wanda, this should be cut 11. This is Adam Kinzinger. Just keep in mind, Democrats pretty much redistricted him out because they didn't even like him. But here he is talking about January 6th being as crazy as 9/11. Listen to that.
Oh boy.
Not all the details of them and not how many of them. We knew that during the attack, Rudy Giuliani was still making calls. We knew that he was making that effort. I think he had called, I don't remember who it was at this point, and they said, I can't talk, I'm hunkered down here. And he's like, okay, well, calls the next person. So, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of cold because you think of Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor after 9/11. That's not only not caring about this really craziest attack since 9/11 to happen in this country.
I think that if you say things like that, the craziest attack since 9/11, I mean, you're immediately disqualified from consideration as a serious person. Folks, that does it for us today. I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow.